Downstairs. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Mongols. I am Mike. With me is Kev and special guest, the Mondo. Mondo, how's it going, man?
Hello. Oh, it's great. How are you guys?
We're good.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Super exciting.
Okay, we gotta get into it, you know, right off the bat. I think that the synergy between the Mandalorian and the Hounds is like chef's kiss. So just like right off the bat, where did the idea come from? Where did the armor come from? Like, tell us all the secrets.
Okay, so actually I have to Casey, who's no longer with the team, he was one of the office staff last year. He's now with Flower City. He was my ticket person. So when I got season tickets, he was my contact. And I had just gotten a 3D printer and I wanted to print something. And I really wanted to print a helmet. And so it was between the Mandalorian helmet and Commander Shepard's helmet from Mass Effect. Not a lot of people know Mass Effect. A ton of people know the Mandalorian. So, and Casey was like, do it. Absolutely. 110%, please. So that started it. The first iteration of the armor, so if you saw me last year and you haven't yet seen me this year, the first iteration of the armor was made out of foam. And then I gradually 3D printed everything, finished everything, painted it. I did it all myself. A big shout out to Galactic Armory, because they're the ones who made the STL files that I ended up using. And he does amazing work with. So if you have a 3D printer and you want to print some really cool Star Wars or space related stuff, Galactic Armory is the place to go. They have everything.
It feels very Mandalorian in that, you know, start with some makeshift armor and then upgrade and then the Beskar. Yeah, here
yep.
you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I had my own Beskar journey throughout the I actually think it was the last home game of the regular season. I had the full 3D print set. And I was actually, this was my flight suit. This is a hoodie that I cut the sleeves off. This was my original flight suit for the 3D print armor. And now I have like an actual flight suit. It's not really a flight suit, but I can't give away all of the secrets. For all intents and purposes, it's a flight suit. And so I don't wear the yellow hoodie anymore, which is why I'm wearing it today, because yeah. I'm not in the armor, so I can wear this.
Yeah. What's it like to, you know, go to games? Most people don't really see your face, but you still have kids coming up to you at the end asking for your autograph, and you know, you've become like this little local legend.
So first time I was asked for my autograph, it still throws me off. If I'm being totally honest, it still throws me off every single time. I was like, but I haven't done anything. And the kids were like, oh, but you're so cool. And I'm like, all right, well. So I had to, on the spot, come up with the autograph for the Mondo, which there was a lot of panic. It's hard, especially being on the camera and stuff. It's tough because I emote a lot with my face. You know, I express a lot of emotion through my face, and I have to remember that I can't do that with the helmet on, which is the tough part. So I have gotten way more active with my hands, which, I mean, I was already pretty active. I've just gotten more vigorous, much to the chagrin of everybody who sits in the row in front of me. So
that's awesome.
But yeah, no, I think it's an awesome feeling. Kids, especially when they come up and, you know, the Mandalorian is their favorite character, or Baby Yoda is their favorite character, and they identify with that. Like, that's actually super awesome, and that's great. And I just love that. That's an unintentional, I guess, boost to me being the Mondo.
It makes me wonder, what is the, and we don't need to come up with this here, but what is the equivalent of Baby Yoda in like the Hounds universe?
Oh, geez.
What does that even mean? I don't even, what does that mean?
So so Baby Yoda is this so on the Mandalorian TV show, Baby Yoda is one of the first contracts that you see Mando get, and it's basically Yoda but in like child Yoda, and he goes and gets him, delivers him to some galactic agent, and then ends up forming a bond with this infant and then saving him, and then the rest of the show is kind of there.
It's almost like, from like a father son figure, almost. Yeah, like without the son figure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that there is one yet. I don't think, unless one of the players has a kid and suddenly sticks that kid with me. I don't think there is. please don't.
Yeah. Some player just rolls up and hands you their kid at the end of the game. Yeah, that might not be great. Well, welcome in. Like, we're super excited to have you here. You're at like all of the games. You're a big part of the experience. So really looking forward to getting your thoughts on all things Hounds. And can't wait. Kev, you've been sort of sitting quietly there. Other than, have you not seen The Mandalorian?
No, I haven't watched it.
Oh, you're killing me, man.
Everyone says it's really good. I know, like, you know, it's a super high quality show and everything. I just haven't watched it.
We should convince Jeff to put it on in Highmark Stadium. Yeah. Just like episode.
It's a good screen for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kev, what have you been up to?
Not much. This past weekend was pretty nice in Knoxville. We have an annual like chalk walk art thing where like a bunch of artists come in and just do like really cool like chalk art throughout Market Square. And so went down to like check that out. And then also this weekend was the Knoxville Marathon. And so we kind of...
Did you run it?
No. two birds with one stone. And we were down in downtown to see like, you know, the eventual winner run through. The winner, 26.3 miles in 2.5 hours. Like, I think it was 2:35. It's just insane.
I applaud anybody and everybody that even attempts a marathon, because like I can't even fathom it.
It was not last Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving before that, I wanted to try and run a half marathon, just like, you know, whatever, in like a neighborhood that I'd like to run in. It ended up being a rough day for it. It was like a hilly route, and it was like 40 degrees and raining. Still wanted to do it. I came home. Riley, my wife, was like, how was it? And like, I was like, it was the hardest thing I ever did. Like, I was like, I never want to do that again. It was terrible. It hurt. It's really rough. So
I think I could bike a marathon. I could definitely do a half, but running it, I have no interest.
Yeah.
I have considered. So we ended up titling this episode, Is This the Way? Which we'll get into. I mean, you could sort of get the reference there. I almost titled it something related to the eclipse. Did you guys do anything for the eclipse, Mondo?
I'm dog sitting. So I attempted to get the dog that I'm sitting excited about the eclipse, and absolutely failed. I was excited. I went out and
I was like, how do you get a dog excited? Were you just like hyping him up? Like, let's go.
I was looking for anything. I mean, so I love another reason why the two options for a helmeted figure was Shepard or Mondo was because I love space stuff. That's why I fell in love with Star Wars. And so like eclipses and stuff, like this is my jam. Like, yeah. this is my stuff. And one of the things that I've always heard is animals react really interestingly mm-hmm. to eclipses. So I was like, show me something. Give me.
Were you just like looking at this
interesting?
Dog, like, no.
Essentially, yeah. I was like, do a thing. Of course, I picked the wrong dog. I'm dog sitting a greyhound. And greyhounds just, especially rescue greyhounds, typically do not know how to dog.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I may have chosen poorly, but.
I also have a dog that doesn't know how to dog. She is a former sled dog from Alaska, so she's just used to like constantly being in work mode. So I was thinking the exact same thing. I was like, how is Dory going to react to this? And she was just like sleeping on the floor. She cared less. So yeah. Kev, did you do anything?
It was rainy here. It was literally raining at the time that like it was supposed to be thing. I don't know. I got super lucky. 2017 we had one before, and that like perfect right over where I work. And it was like sunny out and all. So like, you know, I got lucky with that last one. I don't know. I wasn't that interested. I almost didn't even go outside for this. But because I didn't think we were going to see anything. And that was true.
I know Josh and Liz went to Ohio to catch it. They sent some pictures. It looked amazing. Steve got some amazing pictures. He also went to go see it. We tried something new. My wife saw this online where, for whatever reason, don't ask why, she has a disco ball hanging on our front porch. I don't know how it got there. I don't know why it's there. It's just there. And there are some mornings that it's really nice. It like brings in different light patterns into the house. And
it's
like,
not that weird, Mike. You don't have
I'm just saying, I feel weird. I mean, we're in the middle of nowhere. There's a disco ball. But anyway, we saw somewhere where last time there was an eclipse, somebody hung a disco ball outside. And then the shape of the eclipse basically reflects off of every one of the tiny little mirrors. And so we tried it, and it was cool because we basically had it almost looked like our house was covered in polka dots, but all the polka dots were the actual eclipse. So like as it progressed, you could see it get closer and closer to it. Never actually got to 100% from where we are, but it was a really cool effect. I was glad that we at least tried that. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I saw some of the photos you've shared. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Guys, let's get into the game here. So the Hounds get their first point of the season, draw 0-0 against Tampa. You know, one of the big talking points right off the bat was that this was Kenny took now the all-time game leader with 196. Mondo, you were there for the festivities afterwards. How was that with him and the team?
That was awesome. I've said this, I think, from the beginning. The USL and especially the Riverhounds just give insane, unprecedented access to the players, and it's incredible. And Kenny is like one of the most humble dudes. Like, he's like, it's just another day, and it's like, no, it's not another day. Like, you just set I'm gonna wax poetic here. I think Pittsburgh in general has just been blessed with these like really great, amazing athletes who are just incredibly humble, like Fleury, Crosby, like all these dudes are just, again, unprecedented access and incredibly humble dudes.
Yeah.
I mean, if we weren't super hyped about it and the rest of the team wasn't super hyped about it, you would have never known.
Yeah.
It was an incredible milestone.
We were talking off air a little bit about how you got to be the guy carrying the crown that eventually went to Kenny. What was that like?
Oh, that was awesome. That was actually my one request. So I made the crown.
I didn't realize you made it too. Nice. Yeah. Okay.
I made the crown. I made the box. I personally had a better, more interest in the box than the crown itself. Just because it's the little details that always sell the item to me. And so it was like the little details of the box, but so I made the crown in the same way I made my armor. So 3D print, same method of sanding, same finishing. So basically Kenny has Beskar crown.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. I'm still glowing about it.
Yeah.
Still, I think my one regret is I kind of awkwardly stood off to the side of the team picture. So if you're looking, I'm like literally 3 feet off camera.
Yeah.
Just like awkwardly holding the box wall. And then Dick did his slide in right past me. Like literally brushed past me.
So to what? To correct that regret, do you move closer or do you just get out of the way entirely?
No, I would have moved closer.
Okay, yeah.
I think I would have attempted. I may have attempted to slide in with Dick.
I was just gonna say. Yeah. I think that's the
both of us just come in.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it was great, you know, to see that it was such a festive environment for Kenny breaking the record. Now it's just, you know, only onward and upward from here. Assuming he, you know, plays out the rest of the season, that's going to be a tough one for anyone else to break moving forward. So that was a big thing. The other big thing that the team sort of dropped was the new digital display boards all around the field, which, you know, you look at other stadiums and things like that, it's like, yeah, that's normal. I feel like that's kind of a big deal for us. I think it's cool. I did notice every time the train went past, they had a hype train that like rolled around the board, like in sync with it, which was cool. The one thing that it did cross my mind is I've been down there on the field in those seats. And so like right along the field. And so to know that there's not a ton of room between the sideline and those seats, and now you've got this board in between, and that board is constantly changing with colors and lights. I wonder how much of a distraction it is for the guys. It'd be interesting to talk to one of them. Kev, you're like,
I'd be surprised if it was. I mean, I feel like they play with it, right? I mean, like other stadiums have this. I mean, it's so.
Listen, I was just having this conversation with my son. So his soccer team, they wear green jerseys. And he was saying that, like, for him, when he spins around, it takes him a half second to identify, like, where his guys are because it matches, it, like, blends in with the field. And I remember Fleury was doing something, too, where he would wear, I think, white pads because he knew when guys would go to shoot, his pads would blend in with the ice. And they could tell,
he used to have the yellow pads and he switched.
Yeah, and then he switched to the white. Yeah. So I don't know. It's just a mental thing. We'll ask the guys and sort of see what their thoughts
are. I get the green jersey thing. I agree. That's weird.
Yeah. But yeah,
I think because it's moving,
yeah,
it separates itself a little bit. I can tell you from the stands, I didn't notice the boards.
Oh, interesting.
It's because of that narrow field of view with your helmet. That's
I mean, that's probably helping, but I would say. Actually, the moving board in the peripheral has to be some kind of like that has to be a little bit of a distraction with like moving animations just like on the edge of your vision.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing if you're staring right at it, right? You can kind of know to ignore it. But when it's like right on the edge,
it does lend a certain level of professionalism though that I appreciate.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, like watching it, you know, on the stream, it does feel. I know it is weird and it's almost shallow to even say this, but I remember like watching games last season and seeing the boards and thinking like, we're not really, you know, up there yet. Right. And so, yeah, this is, I like seeing this.
We'll have to talk to Robbie. I think any of the wide guys like Robbie, Etu, Blackstock, like the guys who have to play like next to them, like how much does it actually mess with them? And they'll tell us, especially because they have the example from last year, this year. Could be an interesting conversation. The one other thing just to bring up about not on the field stuff. The game was on Golazo instead of ESPN Plus, which is basically the CBS Sports app. So I'm in this weird kick where I'm half considering just getting rid of streaming altogether and going back to physical media. That's a whole other conversation for another time. But I was excited.
You wouldn't be able to do this podcast.
No, this is a different story. But anyway, I was excited to see that the game was being streamed for free on the CBS Pittsburgh app. And then it was also streamed for free on CBS Sports. Now, Kev, you said because you weren't in market, you weren't able to go back and watch the game after the fact. So that's one downside. But I did confirm with the front office that basically any time that KDKA Plus is covering the game, it will be on that CBS Pittsburgh app. So you could watch it for free on there. Only certain games will be on Golazo. Otherwise, everything else will be on ESPN Plus. So that's just sort of the announcement.
I feel like we had this conversation in preseason when some of these like numbers went out, but I mean, do you guys know off the top of your head the percentage of games being covered by like KDKA and therefore not on ESPN Plus?
Well, so KDKA is covering all of the local games. It's this Golazo thing that's thrown off the ESPN Plus thing.
Okay.
So yeah, you should still be okay.
Cool.
Yeah. On the field, the Hounds had a week off to try to right some wrongs after three losses in a row. They moved to more of a 3-4-3. You basically had Dick at the back, and then you had sort of three center backs, Biasi, Hogan, and Osamanu. You had Etu and Blackstock sort of wide, sort of running, you know, making that back three into a back five, all the way up to almost a front four or a front five. In between them, you had Griffin and Forbes. Griffin's pulled out of a center back position back in the midfield, which we will talk about. And then up front, you had Kizza, Sterling, and Mertz, really. It sort of started off with the two of them up top with Mertz a little bit back. By the end of the game, it was three guys up front. Sterling was someone that everyone's been itching to sort of see get out there and run around. Guys, you know, with all of that, I guess, Mondo, I'll start with you. Give me a takeaway from this game. What did you think?
I really liked what we saw. I really liked it. Yes, we only came away with the draw, but we saw all of the creativity we expect from Griffin is back. Like, he has not gotten rusty over the postseason. He hasn't gotten rusty being played out of position. And I'm not saying he's a bad defender. I think he's a person who excels in any position he's in. That being said, I think he's best as like a defensive midfielder. He's the conductor. He's all of our best moves came through him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the case, I think, last season too, for the most part, is a lot of really good moves came out of Griffin. And the nice thing about him not being in defense is now he has the ability, he has cover behind him. So he has a little bit more afforded, you know, both in defense and going forward, where he's not the last guy. And so he can be a little bit more pushy. He can be a little bit more aggressive. And whoever Tampa Bay's nine, Arteaga, I think.
Yeah.
That dude, I think, is the hallmark of what we're going to see basically in that region of the pitch for the rest of the league. And between Danny and Hogan, he was completely nullified.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. I mean, there was a couple times early on in the game, there was a connection between Griffin and Blackstock, where from sort of that low-lying midfield position, he's whipping balls in his Blackstock streaking down the right-hand side, that it just connected a few times. And they're just like, oh, there it is. Like, that's
what we're going to say. I mean, yeah. we had several good chances. We had several good chances the last few games, but you could just see how much we were stretching Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And as much as, again, this is a draw, this is early in the season, Tampa's going to the playoffs. We know Tampa's a playoff team, because that's what they do.
Yeah.
Agreed. I think this is an early version of a really solid Pittsburgh team that held its own against a really solid team that's been established.
Agreed. I sort of had it in my notes that, and Kev, you can rebuke this because clearly I'm a Danny Griffin fanboy, but I felt like he was head and shoulders the best player on the field. There were times where he'd get the ball and he wasn't afraid to hold on to it. He'd have like three guys swarming around him and he would just like cut once, twice, lift his head up, keep cutting. And like, there's just it feels like Kenny like 3 or 4 years ago. And so I like, that's only good for this team moving forward.
Yeah. No, I mean, this week you're not going to hear me say anything bad about Griffin. And I was really interested. Well, I guess before even talking about Griffin specifically, I was so ready to begin laying into this team a little bit. Even though it's early and there's four games or whatever. And I can't bring myself to do that this week. Cause yeah, I thought the performance was actually pretty good against a good, I mean, I don't know. It's still early in the season. I agree that, like, yeah, Tampa, based on their pedigree, you know, they're likely to be one of the top teams in the East. Still hard to kind of feel that out. Like, I didn't really expect Louisville being what they were last season. I don't know. We'll see what Tampa is. But yeah, I mean, like, this was a good performance. We were the better team. We created more chances. I think that was a big thing for me was, okay, regardless of whether or not we're putting the ball in the back of the net, can we at least create, you know, more than one half decent chance? And we did. And Griffin was a key part of that. I was intrigued and interested with him being the quarterback kind of deeper in the back three. However, after this performance, I'm willing to abandon that experiment because he was that good. And Mike, I agree with you. I mean, like, he was doing things on the field that I think historically I kind of kept that mental space for Kenny being that player. And I just feel, you know, I still kind of hold the opinion that I think Kenny once every few games will do something that no one else in the field can do. And that's what he can bring. But yeah, I mean, Griffin's really stepping into this captain role and he's kind of running the show wherever he's at. And I'd take a team full of them. So,
well, and I'll say this too, you know, we've been talking about how long is the Griffin at center back experiment going to last. And it seems like after 3 weeks, who knows, we might go back to it, but Lilly seemed to move him forward. I don't think that it's without additional tinkering though. I think if you watch this game and you looked at the center backs that we had with Biasi and Hogan and Asumanu, there were a number of times that Biasi was trying to pick his head up and carry the ball past the first line to then be able to make passes and split things. And I think Asumanu was doing the same thing. And interestingly enough, they were going inside, not outside. Like there were a couple times that Biasi would pick up the ball and head towards like the center circle. And I was like, oh, that's different. So I wonder if there is, if Lilly isn't saying, okay, well, let's move Griffin up, but let's still try to get some of that distribution from the back somewhere and sort of see where it goes.
Well, I think that's the nice thing about Biasi, Asumanu, and Hogan. All of them can play. Like, they're not just big groks who just want to kick the ball down the field. And so I think that's pretty intentional on Lilly's part this season to just try to get a bunch of players on there that can move the ball and find a pass. I mean, whether or not it plays out, who knows? I thought particularly we were weak on the wide areas in this game. Mm-hmm. I love Etu, but I don't think Etu had the best game. He got on the ball, but, you know, Black Stock, same thing. I think there were a couple times where both of them were a little sloppy in defense. Yeah, I don't know. Let's see what happens. I was impressed with the bits that I saw from Sterling. That
was going to be my next question. So it felt like, well, there were a number of comments that we got, and actually here we'll share some of them right now because they all kind of touched on similar stuff. So I just put out a question saying, hey, how's everybody feeling? We had, this was over on Twitter, apologies. Mike said, 4 games in, we've only scored 1 goal, still concerned about the offense. We had Samwell say, Bob's doing Bob things and it's starting to click. Who would have guessed? Still missing a real scoring threat once in the attacking third, which makes me concerned heading into every match day. And Whiskey said, forwards seem lacking. Mertz is carrying half the team by being fast and everywhere. Team seems more fit and less gassed early, like the first couple of games. Mondo, what were your thoughts on Sterling? I mean, this was a guy that everyone seems to have been itching for. I think it's tough to sort of judge off of just one game, but what are your thoughts about, I guess, just the forwards in general?
So this is going to sound really weird. This is definitely a way too early hot toe, as you know, the Steel Army Discord says. What I saw from Sterling was a lot like a very young Didier Drogba. Ooh. Like, he's making...
Jesus Christ, if we can get like 10% of that, that'd be great.
his movement in the attacking third is really, really, really throwing defenders off. And I think a lot of that, listen, we could probably wax poetic about the difference between, you know, European soccer training versus American soccer training, and that's a discussion from a different time, but Sterling's movements is definitely messing with the defense. They're not expecting somebody who's going to just play on their shoulder and is like, unlike last year, what we saw, Sterling is like pushing. He's constantly just trying to, at least that's what I saw this game. I think he was really unlucky not to score on his debut. I will say it was really interesting seeing Mertz as like a false nine to bolster. Like, that was a really interesting, I would almost rather him be more like a out and out winger. Like, and move to like a four, like a 4-3-3.
Yeah, he has the energy to almost take up this position that like Blackstock was in or something.
Like he has that speed and he draws defenders.
Yeah.
And I feel bad dissing, you know, the defensive line on the back of, you know, going 90 minutes without letting a goal in. But at the same time, I think we could have afforded to let Etu or Blackstock out for like DeShields or maybe Kayette, and snuck in another midfielder instead.
I mean, yeah, I think Mertz gets into good positions. I just think, yeah, if you're playing a player that high up the field, you want, I don't know,
more ball up there. Yeah.
Yeah. And this has been my issue with Mertz like the entire time is just, I just don't think he doesn't put the numbers up that you kind of want to for a position like that. You could still have a serious impact on the game if like other players around you are scoring, but in drought periods where, you know, four games, one goal, you really need to, like, yeah, you need people who can put the ball in the back of the net, and, you know, in spite of a lack of confidence. And I just don't know if he's that person.
Well, I mean, that raises the question, right? So we've played four games, we have one goal, and it was basically a consolation goal because I got a goal when we were in Louisville. Do you guys?
Oh, this is going to be really mean for me. I don't even count that goal.
Well, I mean,
it was a bit of a fluke. It legitimately was a bit of a fluke. I don't count that goal. I'm really sorry.
No. But here's the question: do you think that you saw? Okay, so you're talking about how Sterling's making good runs, and I think that what we especially saw in the preseason is that Sterling has the ability to be a contributor, not just a goal scorer. And so to bring other players into the play with him. But do you, it's still four games with one goal. Does Lily change anything on the offense heading into the game this weekend against Rhode Island? Or do you think that we saw enough that it's like, just give it a few more weeks and let things fall into place? Because we had chances. We just didn't put them away.
Who are you asking?
I'll ask you, Kev, since you spoke up. Yeah.
No, like I said before, like before this game, and on paper, I would have been so willing to be like, yeah, he's like starting to worry a little bit, blah blah blah. Need to have a serious look at ourselves. But no, I mean, I would say based off of that performance, let it run for, you know, at least another week. See what happens in practice. I thought that was a good performance. I think everything was there, other than putting the ball in the back of the net. Defensively, we were sound. We kept, you know, their chances limited, which I think is like, I don't know, anytime you're in a bad run, I think that's the first thing you got to do is you got to be hard to beat, and you got to be
down,
like, you know, yeah, not conceding goals. I thought we did a good job with that. It's not even just that we got the clean sheet. It was, you know, Dick didn't have to be the best player on the field, right? He makes a good save off a free kick. Yeah. But you know, it wasn't like he walks away with six stops and, you know, we're carrying them on our shoulders. The team played well defensively and we created chances. We're committing bodies forward. We're just not putting the ball in the back of the net. So no, I mean, this, all of that leads me to say, like, you know, again, you know, just carbon copy this and try it again. And probabilistically over time, I think it works out.
Mondo, you agree?
Yes and no. Specifically for this game, just because I'm really liking the way that our defense is able to really aggravate forwards on other teams. Something that I noticed in the first few games is a certain Mr. Oh man, his name is going to slip my mind, so I'm going to cheat. Please ignore me cheating.
I cheat all the time.
a certain Jackson Walty.
Oh, yes.
He likes to really, he's really good at getting under the skin of opposing players and getting them to act out aggressively. And I mean, Biasi's good at that too. And also Biasi is made of adamantium or something, because like I've seen that dude literally get wrecked and stand up and just be like, what? Like, but I would have loved to see a little bit of that, especially with how Arteaga was like, he should have been booked so many times, but with how he was acting and how he was getting more and more emotional, I would have liked somebody to step up and really start like jabbing him a little bit, like really get under his skin. And the other thing I'm going to say is this is so being only familiar with Lily for a season and four games, we had 12 shots inside the box, 3 shots outside the box. So total 15 shots to Tampa Bay's 6. Mm-hmm. This is like unheard of for a Bob Lilley team. Mm-hmm. First of all, we have double digit shots. And second of all, we outshot our opponents 2-1. Like that is, in my opinion, that is incredible. And that's not something we would have seen last year. And I think that means we're moving in the right direction. And I said almost the same thing last home game. We were unlucky a ball didn't go in.
That's fair. I think one of the things that we talked about last season was that we were getting shots, but they were all sort of coming from the same place. They were all coming from Dequa. And right. So I think to get that number of shots
good place for it to come from.
From well, yes, but like to get that number of shots from so many different people is exactly what we were calling for last season. So maybe it's just a case of like this just needs some time to simmer. And
I will devil's advocate my own statement though. There were moments where we were all screaming for a shot. Yeah. And they tried to, I don't know whether they were trying to go for like the perfect pass. There was a moment where Sterling passed to Forbes to shoot and it was cleaned up and Sterling should have taken it. And I really applaud him being unselfish. And I think it was one of those, this is like a big day for Forbes. Let him become the hero, but like, dude, take it. Yeah. Like forget all of that. It may have been the reverse of that, but it was basically Forbes and Sterling. And I think like he should have just shot. And there was a few of those moments where just shoot it.
So let me ask you this. You were sort of talking about Sterling specifically. Now that we've seen him for this game, we saw a little bit of him the previous game. I might be setting this number too low. 10.5 goals for the season. Are you taking the over or the under for that? Keeping in mind that Dequa had 20. So if Sterling gets less than 10.5 or gets slightly above 10.5, we need goals to come from somewhere else, which I think could happen. Based on what we saw, you know, Griffin was ripping some shots. Mertz was ripping shots. Kizza was ripping shots. But
none of them were going in.
None of them going in. The thing is, we had several goal line clearances.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, that's the thing. Like, and there was several very impressive saves. So that's what I'm thinking of when I'm thinking of these shots too. Is we had several that just. And last season, we'd be dying for somebody to even get in the attacking third because all they were doing is possession, possession, possession. And then maybe a ball over top. And this is like directed on goal. This is like somebody had to intervene to stop. Or it was off the post and it was just unlucky to not be just like another inch to the left or to the right, you know. I think I'm going to take the over. Actually, I think he's going to score more than 10 just because it looks like he's going to get fed a lot. It's going to be on him to convert. He's going to get the chances.
Kev, what do you think?
I'm going to take the under just because I don't know how many games he's going to play. I forget the guy the big name.
We always do this.
Two seasons ago or something. I forget his name.
Dean and then Kelly.
Kelly. And then he just like rode the bench. I think it's just too early for me to know yet how Bob's going to shake this out. And taking the under on Sterling worries me too, because I don't know where goals are going to come from this season. I don't know if Kizza is going to get plus 10. I worry about Mertz's numbers. I don't know where our goals are going to come from this season. Just because I don't think anyone particularly looks solid. I don't know. It's funny. It's like I've said this now a couple times. It's a weirdly, I think, under talked about and underrated thing, especially at like tiers that the Hounds are at. Being good at shooting is, I think, underappreciated. I think often things can get overcomplicated and we can worry about systems and, you know, getting into good positions and crossing and passing and creating chances and all this other stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, having someone who's really good at just tucking it in the corner consistently, like 8 times out of 10, it's a hard thing to do. It's valuable at this level. I just don't think we have many. Dequa is great at it. Dequa could take a position that looked very kind of 50-50 average and constantly, you know, hit 80% of the time it goes in the back of the net.
We're going to talk about him later. Stop talking about Dequa.
Sorry. Well, you know, I don't look at the agenda, so I'm not trying to care. Yeah.
I mean, if it makes you feel better, I also have thoughts about Dequa. So
yeah, good. But yeah, anyway, to summarize, I'm taking the under on Sterling just because I think he could do it if he gets a run of games and gets some confidence, and players around him start playing, you know, a little better. But
I think I might take the over just from the standpoint of it, especially early in the season. It's always the defense that sort of shores itself up first, and then it takes a little bit more time for the offense to start clicking. And I think that this is one game that we've really sort of seen the Hounds in this formation. And I think if we can be throwing bodies forward, and if we get Danny and Kenny sort of clicking with, you know, Sterling and Kizza the way that they click with Mertz and Blackstock, then there could be some scary stuff happening. So I'll remain optimistic for the time being, and I'll say that Sterling gets more than 10. Guys, what else did we see in this one? Mondo, give me another talking point here.
So I mean, other than loving Danny in the midfield, so I'm really interested. So this is where I'm gonna sound like a hater, and I'm sorry, because Robbie's a homeboy. Like, he's a homegrown dude.
Bring the hate. I'm so with you.
It's not that I hate him. I think he's
dude. Yeah, for sure.
But I want we can't hang the entire team on Danny Griffin. Yeah. We can't hang the entire team. Like, Kenny's getting older, so he's going to be spending less and less minutes out there. We also can't depend on him to be our match winner, our, you know, the director, the... And Danny's doing what he can do. I think Danny is the perfect, like, he is ready to step into that role. And I think, you know, every game shows that more and more. I don't know whether it's formation. I don't know whether I just don't like a defensive, you know, a defensive formation or play style, but Sample looked good. Waltie's looked good. Like, I'd like to see more of Nate. I'd love to see more of Nate.
It feels like you want to say something like hurtful, but you just don't want to say it.
No, because I felt bad last season when he was on the bench. Like, I felt bad when Robbie was on the bench last season, because he's kind of like, he's a heart and soul player, right? Mm-hmm. So he may not be the most gifted player on the field, but he brings a level of stability and heart to the team that, like, team chemistry wise, that you need. You're not going to get that from just anybody. So it's not like you can just exclude him. And it could be a situation of, because of how everybody else has been set up, and it could just be a situation of, because we've been playing so aggressively defensively the last, like, 3 games until this one, that he just hasn't had his moment to really start coming out of his shell. And it could be because of his injury last season. I haven't really seen him shine and actually be, you know, step into his true skill set. That being said, I think he would, I still think he'd be a great winger. Like give me a left wing, right wing. Like, I feel like he would be amazing up front, out on the wing, because he's fast. One of the best things about Robbie is he's fast. So put him out there and let him, like, bomb it.
I agree. I mean, I think my problem with Mertz has always been I just don't know what his best position is. And I'm with you that I think if we play like a front three and he's around other two attacking minded like just forwards, I think they can all complement each other pretty well. And you know, he has the speed and he has the kind of, I don't know, sometimes you need a player that is just like attuned to wanting to get into the box, like constantly kind of trying to break break into the box and make something happen. I think he has that. But short of that, I don't know if Lily's going to stick with a front three or if you would even want to call it a front three in this game. Has he been like that? No. I mean, I'm trying to think like in the era of what Cicerone and Dixon, like over the course, he might've started out with Cicerone on the left, Dixon on the right and Sadiqua through the middle. But he ends the season with Dixon at like right wing back and all that stuff. So I think Lily's probably not, he doesn't love three, like playing a front three. And I don't know if I'm guessing, I think Mertz's best position is maybe in a front three. Just because, yeah, I mean, if you're playing like one striker and if you play him as like a 10 sitting behind him, I just don't think he has enough numbers to just be that kind of player. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think Mertz is obviously a very talented player. And I agree with your point on like, it's important to have people who kind of tied together kind of social cohesion of the club, understand the club, come from the city, and have the energy levels and passion that he has. I think those are all valuable on the field as well as off the field. I've always struggled to know what his best position is, how he fits into a system and like his, and his numbers. So yeah, I think it's a really big season for him.
I think it's kind of crazy when you think about it, because looking at this game, I would have probably said that I thought that Mertz was like our second, third, fourth best player on the field. But to your point,
okay, those are big. Second, third, or fourth. Which
no.
Fourth, but that's still, and he's the average player.
Top half. No, fourth isn't average. Like fifth or sixth is average. So like I'll say second or third just for the sake of the argument. But to Mondo's point, you have Sample knocking at the door, which he came in and like immediately made an impact. You have Walty, who was not on the bench, but like, again, we know can play, we know can make an impact. So if you're going, if you're just looking purely at midfielders, you're not going to bench Danny. You're not going to bench Kenny. So if either of those
bench Kenny based
eventually,
off of like
eventually, well, yes.
Yeah, but you're still going to get a half out of Kenny.
Right.
You're still getting 45 out of Kenny, like 45 to 60 out of Kenny throughout the rest of the season.
So
until injury.
So yeah, basically what we're saying is, in my opinion, we'll say the third best player on the field is the first one out if you want one of these other guys to come in, purely because of where he takes up a position on the field. So that's,
and
really
just because
critical
of the way Lily plays, like we're going to have five defenders,
right?
Slash three central defenders and then the two wingers. Like unless Mertz replaces Blackstock or Etu.
Right. Exactly. So he's in a really tough spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really tough spot. And clearly there is a cohesion between him and Kenny and Danny. Like the way they work the ball around, it's evident that they've played together for years. So it's just, what do you do about it? I mean, some would say it's a good problem to have, but it's something that Lily's going to have to wrestle with.
Because I feel like Mertz is sitting on the cusp of having a breakout, and it's just a matter of where he can break out.
Yeah.
Agreed. But unfortunately, we have a few players who look like they could have a breakout.
Yeah.
And we want to give them all a chance.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Guys, we could probably just keep talking about this game on and on and on. The ref was inconsistent. like just not good. Like I feel like in the first game I made a comment about how I thought the ref was actually pretty decent. In our first away game, what's against New Mexico. This was not the case. Lots of missed calls against Tampa. The call against Sample towards the end was just ridiculous. Like, it was just not.
It seemed good. Like there might have been a handball in there too.
There were so there was Sterling was taken down in the box. He was clipped from behind. It should have been a pen. Kizza ripped a shot where two guys fell on the ground and one of them smacked it with their hand, which like incidentally,
it was not a. Like, I don't think that was a natural hand position.
Exactly.
I think that would have been a VAR turnover immediately.
Yeah. Like, so that would have... it just wasn't good. I don't want to spend too much time talking about that.
Part of me does think though that because of the nature of refereeing in this league, after a while, I kind of get almost upset with us for not playing the game that's in front of us. Like, so you can play the game you wish as it you wish it to be played, or you can play the game that's in front of you.
Okay, you've always been sort of like the master of the dark arts. So, what would you like the team to do differently in this case?
No, well, okay, this is just an example, not anything specific to how we're playing, but I remember when like VAR came in to like the Premier League and there were drawn lines, right? I remember hearing like commentary about some teams really leaning on that and really playing like a high line offensive trap because they knew a toe offside is offside in the game. And so
Villa's bread and butter. Yeah.
So their probability of like getting an increased amount of offsides, they use that to their advantage because of the technology. And then, you know, so it's, where am I going with this? My point is like, okay, so that's like perfect refereeing, right? In the absence of that, you change how you play. You don't play such a high line. You allow for the chance of mistake and referees, and you alter the way you play. And I'm just saying, I'm not saying, you know, use this for an like offside trap kind of way of playing, but I am saying like, look, the ref's not going to catch everything. So like, yeah, pull a shirt once in a while, or you know, it just things like that. I'm completely fine with.
I get it, but I think that the biggest variability that plays into that is the ref themselves. So there was literally a case where we were on a break and Robbie is like not clear. He was not clear in a way, but he was far enough away from the defender that he was on a break at full sprint and the guy grabbed his shirt and pulled him down and there was no card. And it's like, that's a card.
It was, like, on the cusp of a dog. So like I would consider, I'd be calling my assistant ref over and saying, what do you think about a red for this? Because there was him. And then there was one other defender that maybe could have intercepted Robbie if he was fast enough. And then the keeper. And that was it. It was empty space. I will say, though, the Sterling in the box, I think Sterling went down a little bit too easy. I think that's why the ref didn't get it. It just, I don't think he went down too easy. I think it looked like he went down too easy.
Yeah.
Like he was looking for the contact versus, and I think that's why we didn't get that one. The handball one, I
know we're biased, and so we're going to naturally see
more, yeah.
See the things that go against us rather than vice versa. However, I just wish that we were on the other side of these conversations more than we are. Like, gee, wouldn't it be great if like Tampa had a break and one of our guys pulled him back and no card was given? We're like,
oh, for sure. Look, we were laughing when we played Cincinnati in the Open Cup and Biasi chased the guy down and literally tackled him from behind. And of course, Biasi got a yellow, but we were like, that was great. That was exactly what you should have done.
Exactly.
Cincinnati fans were incensed and it was amazing.
Yeah.
So, guys, we've talked about this game now for like 45 minutes. We should probably put this one to
to maybe put a period at the end of it. I will say I think it could end up being a very important game. This could hopefully, fingers crossed, be the turning point out of a terrible start to the season. I think the performance was there to give enough evidence to suggest that this might have been a turning point.
Well, if it's going to be a turning point, we gotta keep the momentum going, I guess we'll say. Next up, we travel to Rhode Island on Saturday at 7:30. Rhode Island are chasing their first win as well. They have three draws and a loss. So they drew 1-1 with New Mexico, which, you know, played them. They drew 2-2 with Monterey Bay. They lost 4-1 to Tampa. So we fared a little bit better with Tampa. And then they drew 0-0 with the Battery. So that just sort of gives you a little sample of where they're at. Dequa, who we've talked a ton about and we can still talk a little bit more about. He has three goals in three appearances for them. He basically has all of their goals so far. The big question we kind of know Chico a little bit personally. If he scores, do you think he'll celebrate, Mondo?
I think he's going to give a gentle celebration. It's going to be a little bit, and then he's going to be like, respect.
Yeah. Do the Chico thing. Kev? Yeah. Kev, do you hope that he just goes like full out and just celebrates? Like,
absolutely.
I knew you would.
I think that's what I don't know. It's great. It has to be. I've never done it. It has to be great scoring a goal. Like, to enjoy it. There's no, like, you play for another team. It's fine. I don't take it as a disrespect thing against us for, you know, what his time with us. Yeah, enjoy it.
Okay.
I mean, I don't like it.
Even if he doesn't celebrate, I hope he enjoys it.
Yeah.
He's Chico. We know he'll enjoy it. So obviously Chico will be there. Their captain, Connor McGlynn, he got a red card in the game against the Battery. So they will be down without their captain. He also plays midfielder. The other guy that we'll have to keep an eye out for is Mark Ibarra. He has started all four games for them. You can expect him to be on the field for this one as well. We sort of alluded in the offseason that, you know, the genius in getting Chico might have actually been getting Ibarra, who has played with him previously and sort of knows how to feed him balls. So we'll see if that's the case. Put the smirk away, Kev. Otherwise, in terms of formation, the past few games, they've deployed a 3-5-2, like literally trying to stack the midfield. So that's going to be a case. We spent, you know, a decent amount of time talking about Danny and Kenny sort of holding down the midfield. If there's three guys that they're going up against in that midfield, and one of them is Mark Ibarra, it'll be interesting to sort of see what Lily does tactically to try to combat that. And get the Hounds their first 3 points of the season. Guys, predictions on this one. Mondo, I'm going to let you go first. How do you think this one plays out?
I'm going to say 2-2 draw.
Ooh,
draw. I'm going to say goals on both sides, and I think it's going to be a draw because while our defense is starting to really get their sea legs, I think Rhode Island is trying to do the Riverhounds thing. They're trying to do the Bob Lilly, the way they're doing their team. And I think that the one thing that the Riverhounds can't beat is themselves. Mm. We saw that last season against Detroit when they parked the bus and tried to emulate the Riverhounds as well as they could. And that came to bite us in the ass. And I think we're going to see the same thing in Rhode Island.
Kev, what do you think?
No. It's innocent until proven guilty. Show me you can score before I start predicting.
I'll be the optimist here. I'm going to say 2-0 win. And the reason why I say
scoring for you guys.
Hold on. Let me get there. I'm going to say 2-0. I think that the one man who probably knows how to shut down Dequa is Bob Lilly after coaching him for so many years.
Pat Hogan?
Well, I mean, look, you have Asumanu.
Daddy Griffin.
Daddy Griffin
will shut him down.
You have Asumanu, you have Hogan, you have Biasi, who all played with him at least last year. So they all sort of know his tendencies. Dick won't, but that's okay. They'll teach him. You have Kenny and you have Danny sitting in front of them. So they know what Deke was going to do. They know what he bars.
Kenny's not running down anybody.
Kenny. Just wait.
Kenny's passing him off as quickly as he can.
Maybe they'll put Mertz on them. They'll just man mark them the whole game. See how that goes. Anyway, so I think that they shut down Dequa. I think we get a goal before halftime, and then I think with Rhode Island chasing the game, we get another one like consolation goal. Who?
I'm not letting you leave this podcast.
Here we go.
Give me a name.
I'm gonna say that Mertz gets the first one off an assist from Sterling. Off a secondary assist from Kenny. You want me to go that far?
Yeah, I love how specific you get. Yeah.
I think the second one is going to be like another like Kizza flute goal where like nobody's expecting it to happen and Kizza's going to be there to clean it up and that'll be that. So there you go. My goal scores. You gave a 0-0, so you don't even get to pick goal scores. So I can't hold you to that. Yeah. So that is what we think. Obviously, let us know what you think. Guys, this has been a ton of fun. Mondo, we appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
This was a blast.
Thank you. This was a ton of fun. Bring me back.
Good. Yes, we will definitely bring you back and sort of make this a regular thing. Like I said, I think that's it for this one. Everybody, thank you for listening. If you want to see the Mondo without his helmet on, you'll have to check us out on YouTube. Go and subscribe over there. You'll get notification every time a new show comes up. If you'd like to just listen to us, we are available anywhere that your podcasts are available. So go check that out. Otherwise, best of luck to the team. I'm looking for a 2-0 win this weekend against Rhode Island that hopefully we're talking about next week. Otherwise, thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers.
Take care.